Welcome to the Best Boss Ever podcast. I'm your host, Christine LaPerriere, president of Leader in Motion. On this show, we're going to gossip about the best boss you ever had. We're going to hear stories about things that they did that helped you feel valued, helped you feel engaged, and really inspired you. We want to hear about the bosses that changed the way you look at everything. If you want to hear more, join me at ChristineLaPerriere.com and sign up for our newsletter, The Whip. And today we have on Dr. Paul. Dr. Paul has very similar philosophical points of view on leadership, same to me. And so he seemed like a perfect guest. I can't wait for you to hear more from him. Hi, Dr. Paul. How are you doing?
Hi, Christine. Thank you so much for having me on. I love your show. Sometimes I think that unfortunately some people maybe never had a best boss, but there are a lot of lessons to be taken away from the guests that you've had on.
I do have people reach out once in a while and say they're so sad that they don't have a best boss to share about. So I think you're right. Please introduce yourself to everybody who's listening.
So Dr. Paul Marciano, my PhD from Yale in psychology, been fortunate enough to work for myself for a long time now and written a couple of books, most well known for Carrots and Sticks Don't Work, Built a Culture of Employee Engagement with the Principles of Respect. And so my very basic hypothesis, Christine, is that when people feel respected, they engage. And when they feel disrespected, they disengage with their boss and the organization.
This is exactly, I think, so many people out there, that concept of respect means a lot to them. Yeah. So as we're getting started, I know you've worked for yourself most of your career, but just give us a tidbit, any experiences you can remember from working for a boss.
Actually, when I was a professor for a while, my first or second year, I think, very, very green, I had a student in my class who statistics, which was going to fail. She was going to fail. She wasn't going to graduate. And this was a very, very special student. This was the daughter of the president of the university, of the college. And so I went to my boss, the chair, and I said, I don't know what to do here. I can't imagine failing her, despite having begged her to come to office hours and such. He said, Paul, if you don't give her the grade that she earned, you'll be doing her the greatest disservice you can. And I was like, wow, that was an amazing, that support that I felt. For having to make that impossibly hard call and having him let me know that was the right thing to do was just, that was remarkable.
Like he truly endorsed you having integrity and authenticity.
Yes, exactly.
That's such an interesting one because what it does is that keeps your decision-making clean.
It does. And you know, one of the things that I always say is that when a company has clear values, of course, in this case, it was a clear value for me. When you have clear values, it's actually can be very freeing, can be very liberating. Because when you come up against that tough decision, you just go to the values.
Right, right. Whereas if somebody had said, well, can you just recalculate or can
yes.
you a little bit or whatever, you know, a little extra credit or whatever, all of a sudden it distorts that clarity of decision making.
Yes.
That's an excellent example of great leadership. So tell us a little bit about. I know you've done an incredible amount of work in the space of respect. First of all, I'd love you to share with our listeners kind of that acronym or the way that you think about respect. So give everybody just kind of a quick debrief on how you would think about this concept.
Yeah, sure. When I think about respect and the importance of that in driving engagement, I want to understand how a boss can foster that sense of respect with an employee. And so the acronym that you referred to, the R stands for recognizing and acknowledging people for their contributions. Really simple. And we know that when we do that, we increase the level of initiative that people have. So we're recognized, we're acknowledged, it feels good. We're reinforced for that behavior. Unfortunately, as human beings, we often don't pay attention to what's working. We pay attention to what's not working. So employees, as powerful and as simple as it is to go up and say, Christine, thank you for the job that you did. It's made a difference. We get very little of that. So and we can talk more certainly about recognition because it's such an important part of the model. The E is for empowering people. So giving people the tools and the resources they need to be successful. You know, the way you don't respect people and the way you set people up for failure is by putting them in roles for which they're not well equipped And unfortunately, I think that we do that most with our first line supervisors. So right. We take folks that are really skilled at turning the wrench, right, whatever that is, put them into the role. And it has nothing to do with them being effective in terms of delegating and coaching and mentoring and fostering teamwork. So we take really great employees, and then we end up making really ineffective supervisors without, because we haven't empowered them. The S is for supportive feedback. So for giving ongoing constructive and positive feedback. You know, bosses always say, well, I hate giving negative feedback. You don't ever have to give negative feedback. You just have to give constructive feedback coming from the place of, I care about that individual being successful.
Right.
You know, that's what it should be all about. And by the way, if you are unwilling to give constructive feedback, you are not in the right role.
I think that that is powerful. And I just want to slow you down really.
Yeah, please.
That piece around supportive feedback. So I've done about 70 of these interviews.
Yeah.
And I repeatedly say to people, you'll notice that the reoccurring theme out of 70 interviews is not that they were the nicest bosses or that they always said the kindest things all the time. There is a reoccurring theme where the leaders that gave us real, hard-hitting, honest yeah. feedback. But I always say that the real aha moment is that the feedback is truly in service to the individual because they care about the individual first. The business is kind of part of the agenda, but it's not the primary agenda.
Yeah.
And so supportive feedback has been something that I've seen in action in easily 60-70% of these interviews.
Oh, that's great that you've seen that. My most recent book is called Let's Talk About It, Turning Confrontation into Collaboration. And my experience is that so much of the dysfunction in the workplace and in the world is people's either unwillingness to or lack of skill in having difficult conversations, which in the work world often looks like having those constructive conversations. And of course, you know, as well as I do, as well as probably all your listeners, that the longer we wait for those conversations to happen, the more difficult they become.
Absolutely.
And, you know, so when we talk about empowering bosses, one of the most important aspects is giving them the tools, the training they need to have those constructive, meaningful, caring conversations.
Right. Again, powerful. And it makes complete sense because the tough conversations are not that tough.
Right.
Really? I can tell you as somebody who coaches so many leaders, I mean, so many times, I can almost say reoccurring theme, people will come back. I'll challenge them to have a tough conversation. And when they come back, they always go, well, that went better than expected.
You know, one of the things that I say to folks is it's only tough if you say it's tough. Like that's what you're creating in your mind. Mm-hmm. So what I want people to think about is I need to have a meaningful conversation.
I like that. Meaningful versus tough.
Yeah. It's only tough if you say it's going to be tough. And then you're going to create the kind of environment for that conversation, which is more likely to make the other person defensive, if
right.
that's the approach that you're going to take. So tough. When we say things are tough, right? It's like jumping in a cold pool. We psych ourselves out.
You know, it's funny that you say that because even last week I had a tough conversation with someone and the lead up to it, I was full of anxiety and taking deep breaths and staying with the intent that I wanted a great outcome. And again, left the meeting and went, well, that was a great meeting.
And I
that came out of that. And I actually have more clarity and direction. And there really was, you know, as much as I felt like I was going to be charged by a tiger in the meeting, it was actually not at all that.
And you know, one of the things that a great boss does is they own it, right? So let's say that you've been working for me, there has been a problem behavior, you haven't met expectations in some way. And I've let that go. And it could be simple things, right? Like someone's coming into work late. And as a boss, I've avoided that conversation because I'm conflict averse. By the way, most people are quote unquote conflict averse. Again, recognize you haven't done your job. And so when you do have that conversation, it should probably start with something like, Christine, I want to apologize. I should have had this conversation with you 3 months ago when it started. Because guess what? In all honesty, it's not fair to you. It's not fair to an employee.
Yes. I agree. I think that is such an excellent for those listening, just to recap that, because I want to accentuate that point. A best boss takes accountability for the coaching that they haven't given.
Yes.
That's powerful. It's not the coaching they did give that they take accountability for. It's what they haven't done. So just like you said, I see this all the time where I'll be talking to leaders and they'll say, we need this person to change this performance. Let's say improve presentation skills, right? And yeah. I'll ask, what coaching or feedback have they been given on their presentation skills? And the leader will say, well, I haven't had time to sit down and talk to them. It's usually haven't had time to sit down. So it's so important that we're talking about it in a coaching strategy, but it hasn't been important enough for you to sit down and talk to them for a few minutes about it. So to your point, you know, instead of us saying, well, that person should just know what good presentation skills are, you're talking about a leader that starts by owning their side of the fence, which says, hey, you know what? I owe you some feedback and I have not delivered. And I apologize for that, or I'm going to make that right.
First of all, I am not a fan of performance reviews in general, because any kind of an instrument or process that is uniformly disliked by the person giving it and getting it, there's got to be something in there that's wrong, typically, right? Typically, it's not being done well. If anybody has ever gotten feedback that's a surprise to them, negative, right? Feedback. Mm-hmm. And it happened 6 months ago, right? The boss isn't doing his or her job. His or her job is to give regular performance feedback as it occurs, right? As the opportunity presents itself. It's just like, I'm not a huge fan of sports analogies, but sometimes they really work. And in this case, right, if the boss is the coach, he doesn't wait until the end of the season to tell the quarterback, hey, you know, when you threw that interception in game one, that would be insanity.
Right. Right?
But right. Somehow that happens.
We are in complete, I mean, if there was a choir here, you would be singing. Because I couldn't agree with you more on performance coaching. It doesn't look any, so performance reviews look nothing like the way we coach on performance in any other environment. No. So I couldn't agree with you more. And you're right. It doesn't need to be. Like the idea of it being unenjoyable and scary and, you know, just like you said, getting feedback from 6 months later, it speaks so much more to the leader and not the individual. I just really think that that is a great takeaway for us. I don't know why we've institutionalized processes that don't really serve. I really haven't seen them serve.
By the way, I know I can tell we are just a little bit aligned and could wander and talk about this for a long time. I'll take us off track on one more. For me, an interesting question is, we know what it takes to be a great boss. We really do. And I mean, you could go through your 70 interviews and extract, and there are lots of books. I'd like to think mine is one of them, that just get down to really the fundamentals of what it means to be a great boss. So Christine, here's the question. If we know what it is, it's not rocket science. Why aren't there more great bosses?
I think it's a great question. I wish I had the answer to that, but in some ways, I'll tell you, I think it's hard when there's competing priorities, because people, I feel like most often they get gummed up when there's competing priorities. So the example you gave in the beginning is a perfect example of the kind of leadership challenges that the type of people I coach run into, where well, I want to give this, you know, let's say I don't want to give a promotion to an underperforming employee, but that underperforming employee is the CEO's son. Or we've had an understanding in the business that, you know, we need to promote the next generation, or, hey, that person is really, somebody took a shine to that person or whatever. So it's like things get gummy and we don't enable people to make clean, solid leadership decisions when it's against the grain.
Yes. Or you're dealing with, my experience, somebody who is a rainmaker in the organization. So I remember a client who was in an insurance field. He was bringing in a lot of money. He'd been there a long time, and he was just a jerk. I mean, he would just literally, Christine, yell and scream at his admin and embarrass her and other members of the team. And it was just, it was craziness, right? But the president was like, well, if he brings someone, they'd slap his hand, then they take him to play golf and have lunch and say, Bill, you got to be a better, you know. It wasn't until they got a new president in the role. And I talk about a great boss. One of the first things he did when he got in the role was He called Bill into his office and said, I've heard a lot about you. None of it's good. He said, so this is how this is going to go. You're either going to start treating people with respect or you're not going to be here anymore. And I don't care how much money you're bringing in. You can't imagine the amount of respect that that leader got as a result of putting Bill in his place, who actually turned things around after years and years of unacceptable behavior.
And see, making good leadership, not good leadership, excellent leadership, the price of admission, in my opinion, would be wildly powerful. Think politics, price of admission is to have an extraordinary bar of great solid leadership skills. Like,
love it.
You know, there's so many different parts of the world that we could really influence if you made the price of admission an extraordinary bar. But oftentimes we look at all the other credentials and all the other lists of things you know, on the resume. And then we consider those two things like, you know, I see that, you know, they worked at a competitor. They have all this insight, you know, or there's, you know, something that they bring to the table. They have a big following or whatever. So we let the leadership skills be subpar because we think that we're getting something else in return.
Imagine that a middle level manager was being evaluated, okay, getting a performance review, and the boss is giving that to him or her. I've never understood why that middle manager's employees aren't the ones that are doing the performance review.
Absolutely.
That's why I'm a fanatic when it comes to doing 360s. Anyway, all right, so we'll get back on track if you don't mind.
I love it. And just like you said, I want to make sure everybody gets the full acronym, but we're going to make them listen to all the other nuggets of wisdom that we want to share in the sandwich.
Okay, so the P is for partnering. So developing collaborative working relationships, and that means what that really looks like is breaking down the hierarchy. And I know that one of the fields that struggles with this the most does tend to be the medical profession, where it's still that hierarchy. So when we make people feel partners, and we do that in all kinds of different ways, not the least of which is giving them transparency to the numbers, to the vision, to the plan, and input into how their job can go, we create that kind of environment. People feel highly respected.
Amazing. Partnering. I like it.
The second E is for setting clear expectations and holding people accountable to them. So that's the challenging part. We talked about, quote unquote, the difficult conversations. One of the things I'll often encourage managers to think about, as you've coached a lot of people, as I do, and you have somebody talking with you about an employee who's not performing and them not having that difficult conversation. And I'll point out to them, just want to be clear about this. In your not holding that person accountable, other people are losing respect for you.
True. And they're losing respect for that person.
Of course. So it's setting those clear. We all know about setting clear expectations, SMART goals, all that good stuff, right? But when we respect people and respect our team, we hold folks accountable to achieving what they've said they're going to do, and that's integrity. The C is for demonstrating just fundamental consideration, and we often can do this in situations in which an employee either has his or her own health problems or their family members have health problems. And, you know, I remember one talk where I gave and a gentleman came up, a small business owner, and he said, man, I just wanted to share that I had an employee, blue collar, kind of hourly guy, who had come up to him and said, you know, boss, my brother is in treatment for drug addiction. And he was a couple of states away, he said, and my brother really only has me. We don't really have anybody else. And I really feel like I really need to go support him. And boss said, yeah, you know, of course. And when he got back, his boss handed him the paycheck for the last week. And the guy said, you know, I don't deserve this. And the boss said, the most important thing in the world is to take care of your family. I didn't want you to have to worry about taking care of your bills.
I love that. And, you know, I have even a similar story. I had a concussion at one point during my years in business. And I had one client who said, we still have to get it done. And he was in Germany. So I had to wake up at 5 a.m. to present to him at 5. And then he grilled me on a missed formatting issue with one of my graphs. And I was like, I'm working with a concussion. I'm sorry. I'm doing the best I can. And in the same week, I had a different client who said, Christine, don't worry about it. Just keep invoicing me. And I said, I'm probably going to need a couple, you know, I'm going to need at least a month right now to recover. He said, don't you dare worry about it. I want you to invoice me. No. The last thing I want you to worry about is paying bills while you're recovering. And I have walked on broken glass for that man. Like, I will never forget that.
But that's the whole point of the respect model and engagement. When you engage in that kind of behavior for somebody, the amount of loyalty, by doing the right thing, by the way,
right,
the amount of loyalty you garner and the level of engagement of that employee, there is no employee of the month award that's ever going to do anything impactful like that. You know, so for, you know, is there even a the remote possibility, Christine, that you did not give that client of yours more?
Absolutely.
Right, more than you would that other client. It's just.
And to this day, I mean, if he called me, I would.
Of course.
What do you need? Do you want to, you need me to drive to Eastern Canada to come visit you? I will. Because you're right. It's just the amount of respect that I have for him, which in turn turned into me even taking some other high potentials and recommending they meet him. He's, you know, and recruit for positions, the whole thing. But it's just because I would do anything knowing that kind of leader, like I'd refer him to anyone.
And you have to be the kind of leader that would be able to have the kind of relationship with you that allowed you to have the comfort to share that with him.
Right.
So that's really important to recognize. You can't expect to be the leader who is stoic and doesn't want to have any kind of personal connection and have the opportunity. You can't earn the opportunity for that conversation that can make such a difference in the employee's life.
Absolutely. Okay, T.
T. So T is fundamental trust. You know, relationships just don't work without trust. And it's funny because one of the episodes I was listening to, a gentleman was talking about not feeling trusted by his manager. And that was because the manager was micromanaging him. And that's exactly what happens. When we get micromanaged, the message is, you don't trust me to do my job.
Right.
And so when I know I had a situation where I had an employee working for me and I lost trust in her. And what I found myself doing was when she went home at night, actually looking on her computer to see if she did what she said she had done. And the moment I realized that, the next day I let her go.
Right.
Because I knew there was no recovery. You know, I always think about it like a porcelain piggy bank in our relationships. You put a nickel and I put a diamond, right? Over time, we build up this reservoir of trust. And then if something happens, you know, I find out you're saying something bad about me behind my back, you know, it's like dropping that porcelain piggy bank. It shatters into 1,000 pieces. You can never put it back together again. It's just never going to be the same. Yeah. And so it's often the case that it is best for somebody to move on.
Yeah. It's great for all of us to think about, right? If you don't, you know, if you don't trust somebody and you're in a partnership relationship working together with them.
Or personal.
Yeah, right. I mean, I think about that on the personal level too. It's like if you really are at that point, you know that there's something missing in that dynamic.
And there's two kinds of trust, right? So there's the interpersonal trust. Like, I trust you to have my back. And the other one is, I trust you to do your job and to get it done. If either of those two aren't in place, you got a problem, right? It's in trouble.
Well, and that's actually why I find the word trust such an interesting one, because so many of us use it in talks about great leadership and bad leadership and all of that. But to your point, I personally feel maybe even more than two different kinds of trust. There's probably layers and layers to the amount of trust, you know, you to stab me, you know, in the back with a knife. But in the same breath, like, do I feel safe sharing that I need that help because my brother's in rehab or whatever? The, like I said, those stories, like, there's very different levels of people that we trust with varying amounts of information.
And again, I'll go back to when that trust is broken, it's real hard to put back together again.
It's true. And very interesting and, you know, varying, like you said, many varying levels. So first of all, I really love the respect model. So I hear recognizing contributions, empowering people, supporting feedback, partnering, expectations and accountability, consideration and trust. Did I get the acronym right?
You got it.
Amazing. So remind everybody the title so they know where
to
find
it. So it's called Carrots and Sticks Don't Work. Build a culture of employee engagement around the principles of respect. And just so you know, so my PhD was in behavior motivation. I'm a behavioral psychologist about motivation. And as I started to do work, it was clear to me that traditional carrot and stick kinds of reinforcement policies that organizations were engaging in, not only were they ineffective, they actually decreased the overall morale of an organization. And so we're talking about simple things like an employee of the month kind of award. They're actually, and I'm not going to go into any detail, and people obviously will welcome to pick the book up. There are actually 20 well-identified reasons why traditional reward and recognition programs are ineffective in the workplace. And now, you know, one is quite simply that imagine that you're on a team and everybody's working really hard and contributing, and one individual is called out to receive the award. Well, what do you think the rest of those people are thinking? Right? I could have deserved it just as well. And so when people are not recognized for their contributions, in fact, they feel in this case disrespected and their level of engagement would decrease. So traditional reward and recognition programs are not effective, but what is effective is demonstrating respect.
So would you recommend, instead of shining a light on one star player, what would you recommend in place of that? Because I'm sure I've got somebody listening right now that said, uh-oh, I've got Employee of the Month coming right now, and somebody's done a fantastic job and I want to give them recognition. What would you recommend they do differently, or how would you coach them?
I would recommend they walk up to people and shake their hand and say, thank you for the job that you did. It made a difference.
Excellent. And what would you do for somebody who did go extraordinarily above and beyond?
Well, I am supportive of a lot of companies, of course, these spot awards. And I am good about spot awards. One of the challenges, really, though, is oftentimes we have quiet employees. We have employees that are definitely good at being loud and letting you know they've done a great job. But we want to make sure not to miss those quieter employees that do make significant contributions and go above and beyond. And so we want to be careful, right, that people are being appropriately recognized. One of the challenges, as always, if you and I work together, no matter what, because the human condition, psychology, I'm going to think I'm working harder than you.
Right.
I'm probably going to think I'm smarter than you, I'm better than you. That's just the human condition for most of us. So when I see you get that acknowledgement, that award, I still think I'm going to be more deserving than you.
Right. Right.
So as a manager, by the way, if it's authentic, you kind of can't overdo it. And when people say, oh, I don't care about being recognized and acknowledged, the research shows that regardless of what they say, reinforcing behavior increases the likelihood of that behavior occurring again in the future, unprompted, which means initiative, which is what we want from all of our employees.
Amazing. I agree. And it's interesting because I feel like the two of us, we need to build a smarter performance review system, because I've just had a debate with somebody about giving everybody in the organization a 3, like a 3 out of 5. You know, and the argument is, well, you know, we can't give everybody a 5. And I'm like, why?
Why? In my organization, I hope I gave everybody a 5. I want the greatest team I can possibly have. I want everybody to be an all-star. That's my job, is to help them be an all-star.
Right, right. And there is something about it. I think about that all the time. Like if I were to get a 3 every year and be told, well, we can't give you a 4 or 5, it would really make me question why I would double down and what message is that telling me? It's telling me that I will always be mediocre. Even on the day when I show up as a 5, you're not going to be able to give me credit for it.
I completely agree.
It's so interesting. Where are you when they're building these performance review systems?
I have a client that just went through a performance review. He got a 3. The feedback was needs to improve communication skills. That earned this guy a 5. What kind of good boss is that, right? Who's holding that boss accountable to providing that kind of inadequate feedback to somebody who's then super frustrated? Like, I don't get it. And oftentimes what it can come down to is, there was one incident in which this gentleman forgot to copy somebody on email, whatever it was. We are, you know what I mean? We're really good at holding on to single instances and devaluing people based on that single instance. And then the irresponsibility of the manager to provide such limited feedback and zero coaching around it, you know, that guy needs to be the one getting the 3.
Right. Exactly. And so again, and who wants to get out of bed and come up to show up as a 5 the next day? for having just been handed that piece of feedback. It doesn't inspire you to come to the office and go, I'm going to be better.
And you can do it for a little while. But as you said, over time, it's just like, you just give up. It's just demoralizing.
Right. Any other, I mean, this is fantastic. So
by the way, I want to interrupt you. I'm going to interrupt you really, really quickly. Because when you get an employee gets that three, my advice to that employee is always go to your boss and say, what is it that I need to be doing or not doing such that 6 months from now, I'd get a five from you? Ask that very focused question.
Right. And then when the boss says, well, we only give out fives to, you know, one in 100 people.
LinkedIn.
Yeah, exactly. You know, because that's how some of these review processes work. They go, oh, don't take it too personally. Like, you know, almost everybody gets a three. And so I always go, well, that doesn't. Now you've diminished the point of the review to being, you know, that's what you're always going to get. So anyway, very good, good recommendation. I do have one question for you. In your experience, what do you believe the return on investment is to respect-based, fantastic leadership? So in my world, people always question, why am I spending money to build the best bosses? Does it impact the bottom line? And I'm curious what your thoughts are.
Well, I mean, obviously, because the model is that respect drives engagement. And engagement drives productivity and efficiencies and everything we care about, right? The research is pretty clear on this. When it comes to high levels of engagement, it drives all kinds of good performance. And yes, it motivates people and leads to them delivering, again, high levels of initiative. What I can tell you is some very specific stories of individuals who felt highly disrespected. And, you know, I don't want this to happen, but on more than one occasion after having given a presentation, I've gotten an email from somebody in the audience who said, I went into work. He said, I would drive to work and feel nauseous. And what I realized was my boss didn't respect me.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in and I quit. Mm-hmm. So I am really clear. And if you ask folks who come on the show, if you ask people as a real quick exercise, think about the last job that you voluntarily left. And did it have anything to do with a loss of respect? That could have been a loss of respect towards you. It could have been a loss of respect that you had toward your boss, the leadership, to the organization, towards fellow team members. Could be a loss of respect for the work that you did, right? You felt as though your skills were really being underutilized. I can guarantee you that that experience of a loss of respect in some way is an enormous driver of turnover.
Yes, absolutely. And we all know, well, disengaged employees, we just know we're not getting the most, like financially, there's an impact there, even if you can't measure it with a measuring stick. But we know that turnover is
a cost.
Big hit to the bottom line. Excellent. This has been amazing, Dr. Paul. Thank you very much. Do you have any other words of wisdom? We've got leaders listening right now who are trying to figure out how to walk in the office tomorrow and just be better bosses. I want to know, give me those last tidbits that they need to consider.
I would say that there are people listening to this show that have refrained from having meaningful conversations with whether it's their direct reports, their peers, their, you know, bosses, their friends, whomever, you've been refraining from having important conversations. Make a commitment to yourself because you're committed to that other person to have that conversation coming from a place of I care about him or her. And taking responsibility, as I said before, to admit at the beginning, I should have had this conversation with you sooner. I apologize. If you do that, you will fundamentally change those relationships.
I love it. I think that's powerful. Taking real ownership for how you performance coach and support people, you know, owning it. It's your job to have those conversations so you can support people. Great.
And acknowledge people, catch people being good. Catch people doing good. We catch them when they're being bad. We got to catch them when they're being good.
Amazing. And just so everybody knows, how do they come find out and read some more of this great stuff? You mentioned your books. Can you mention them one more time and tell us where we can come find more about you?
Well, just if you go to my website, it's easy enough, www.paulmarciano.com. Email me, paul@paulmarciano.com. You know, Amazon and everywhere else. Carrots and sticks don't work. And I would, and then the most recent book is Let's Talk About It.
Thank you very much. I hope people check you out and continue to learn more from you. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
If you want to hear more, join me at christinelaperriere.com and sign up for our newsletter, The Whip.